Screen Time with John Fardy. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy and this is News Talk's TV and movie show. This week on the show, Jolie Richardson on a role in Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman. And of course, her long acting career and her acting family dynasty. Ed Spellers stars opposite Lindsay Lohan in Netflix's Irish Wish. And he chats about it and not being the next Bond. We review Ethan Coen's Drive Away Dolls. Plus, the one and only Ed Smith chats about his favourite movie. I'm open on Twitter, John_Fardy, or you can email me, screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on Newstalk, although this week on the radio we're coming to you at 8 p.m. due to the little matter of a rugby match. Good weekend to you all. I hope you're doing well. I went to see Frank Skinner on Wednesday night in Vicar Street. Fantastic gig. I'm a fan anyway, but he was incredibly funny. I enjoy stand-up gigs, but they can sag. You know, there's a ebb and flow, a beginning, middle and end. And sometimes the middle, I find you can get a bit lost. Frank Skinner did not sag once. For 90 minutes, nearly 2 hours actually, he was on top of his form. It was hilarious and great. So good man, Frank Skinner, the man who doesn't sag. Now in movies, of course, the big story of the week was the Oscars. And what success for Killian and indeed Element Pictures with Poor Things. You've heard it all week long, but I thought Killian's speech was just perfect. Gracious, proud Irishman, but not, you know, whacking you over the head with a shamrock. His line about peacemakers said a million things with just a few words. And of course, saying Gairmila Mahagat. I just thought it was a perfect speech. And he seemed delighted and humbled to be there. So I thought it was delightful. I watched the entire Oscars live this year. I mean, I usually do, but it seemed to fly by. It ended at 2:30. I'm off Mondays, not to bore you with my working week, but I do have to get children out to school. I was fairly tired. I can't do the late nights the way I once could when I used to get around. Anyway, enough of all that. Now, where do we want to start this week? Well, this week we want to start where we started last week, because last week I was telling you about The Gentleman, which is the new Guy Ritchie Netflix serial on Netflix, which I enjoyed very much, all about Eddie, played by Theo James, who is a very posh guy whose father dies. He's left a big house with lots of money and property, and he doesn't realise, though, his father has been in unison with a criminal gang called the Glass Family. Ray Winston plays the head of that family, and the series is all about Eddie getting a taste for the criminal underworld as he realises that there's a drug business in his house underneath the stairs, and there's boxing and money laundering. Great Guy Ritchie TV. And I brought you an interview with Ray Winston last week and Max Beasley and Kaya Scodelario. But the woman we didn't get to, acting royalty, is Jolie Richardson. Now, Jolie Richardson in The Gentleman plays Eddie's mother, Theo James's mother, Sabrina Hominen, the Dowager Duchess of Halstead, upstanding and honest, though she may present as kind of typical horse-riding country type. That's kind of a front for a very salacious past and indeed a caustic sense of humour. And she's kind of the smartest person in the room. And she becomes increasingly concerned about the dangers Eddie encounters as he tangles with the criminal world. And she's posh, but steely. And as I say, she's played by the great Jolie Richardson, who is from acting royalty. Her mother, and not to talk about her family first, because her acting career is huge as well, but she is the daughter of the actress Vanessa Redgrave and director Tony Richardson, the granddaughter of Sir Michael Redgrave. She is the sister of the late and equally great Natasha Richardson. She has so many credits, from The Tudors to Nip and Tuck to movies like The Patriot and Event Horizon, Endless Love. She was in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Utter acting royalty and a delightful person. And I spoke to her about her role as Lady Sabrina in The Gentleman and a bit more besides.
I'm getting the sense you're my last interview today. They save the fine wine for the end and all that. And I'm getting the sense that with Guy Ritchie, it's kind of almost like we'll say yes, then read the script. People love to work with him. And you've done plenty over your career. Are you one of those people?
Well, it was certainly different to see a Guy Ritchie script turn up and to be offered to be part of it. Yeah, it was a very, very big selling point, and also a lot of our producers had done Peaky Blinders, so it was a very good team. And so even though, you know, when you're signed on, or when you're potentially signing on to a TV series, you don't know what you're committing yourself to, because it might be that you don't have a huge amount to do, and, you know, you'll be booked up for a good 8 months. So, I mean, this, you know, I was working on this series as well as working on another series, so it all perfectly dovetailed. It was amazing to work with Guy. You know, there is a reason that he's Guy Ritchie. I loved... My father was a film director. I never got to work with him, and I felt there was something about Guy's energy that was similar. There was an element of what could have looked like chaos, as in rewrites when you walk on set, but actually wasn't. He sees it all. It is like a master plan. But I love the fact that he had such idiosyncrasies and wanted, in my case, to sort of push her eccentricity. And that sort of was like a carte blanche or green card or whatever to say, just elevate the character. And that was fun.
Tell me this, your character, she's incredibly posh. And Theo talked about, you know, being part of this, rightly or wrongly, crumbling aristocracy. It must be fun, though, to, you know, because there aren't that many posh people anymore that I come across. Like, she's uber posh. That must be fun as an actress.
Yeah, and again, as I was saying before, Guy wanted me to keep pushing that. But I was like, what happened to my children? I'm really posh, and they're getting more sort of London in their speak. They've been spending too much time in the city. But yeah, it was lovely. And what was really lovely in ADR, additional dialogue recording, was that a lot of the time I was just adding noises, and given that it's sort of a different placement, that sort of posh, it'd be like, you know, that kind of stuff. I just love the comedic element to it, using her class.
I mentioned at the start, you've done lots of things in your career, and you've done plenty of TV and obviously plenty of movies. And, you know, it's almost a cliche at this stage, but so many people that I talk to say, you know, the best roles are in TV at the moment, or certainly, you know, 20 years ago, maybe it was like, I'll do TV, I'm stuck. Whereas now, I remember talking to a film critic who said the best movie was the last four episodes of Ozark.
Succession, Beef,
So I guess that almost shame that people had of being TV actors or working on TV is so completely gone with shows like this and the others you mentioned.
It's so completely gone. I mean, I remember way back in the day when I was first offered Nip Tuck, you know, that series that we went on to win the Golden Globes, and it became a really huge hit. But we didn't get Emmys, weirdly, but the best series, I got nominated, all of that. But no, the funny thing was, before that, when I got offered it, my then American agent said, absolutely don't do it. And because it was television, not film, and he was like, hold out. But it was, the script was just so exciting. You know, it was Ryan Murphy, who's just gone on to reinvent the whole television world. Yeah. And then it was around that time, like 6 Feet Under, all those series that just television changed, and it became basically the golden era of television. Now everyone does it, be they Julia Roberts or Nicole Kidman. It's like TV is the mainstream, and then, you know, films have, you know, I'm so happy films are still being made. Oh my God, because I just love going to the cinema.
Yeah. You mentioned your father as director there, and you know, you come from an acting dynasty, it's fair to say, of royalty. People have different views on that. As in, I've spoken to plenty of actors over the course of my career, and it seems the further into their career people get, like I was talking to Richard Harris's son a couple of months ago, and he's so happy to talk about his dad, you know, and it, you celebrate where you come from.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can work both ways for you. But I think, like, say, with Jared or, you know, myself, I'm of an age now that, like, why would I not talk about it? I love my family. I think if you're young, you have to be a bit hot-headed, because if you don't have a sense of self, you are going to go under with the comparisons, because people are quite brutal in what they say to you when you're, like, I'd have people say to me, you know, when I first started out, the first few jobs, you know, oh, I thought you'd just be, you know, rubbish person from some famous family, and you just, you get that enough, you sort of develop a tough skin, and the only thing that will save you is that if you think you have something unique to give. Now, I don't mean like unique that it's so amazing. I mean some niche in the market that you think you can fill or be part of. And I think I was lucky I had a bit of that. I had enormous sensitivity, which I think helped with film and TV work, which I always felt was more my strength than, say, theatre, though I did do a lot of theatre. So it does work both ways. But, you know, come on, if I mean, I happen to love my family. So, yes, I celebrate them, but as my family rather than as what they represent. And weirdly, it was only after my father died that I went back and saw a lot of his work, which is sort of really sad, because all the questions that I had to ask him, I could no longer ask him.
Yeah, indeed. Well, listen, continued success. And it was great to see you in person and in The Gentleman. Thanks a million.
Thank you, John. Sorry, I went off on one.
Not at all. A pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Be well.
Jolie Richardson there, apologising for going on about her family. No need for her to apologise whatsoever. And as I say, she is in The Gentleman, Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman, which is on Netflix since last week, and people are enjoying it. Up next, Ethan Coen without his brother Joel in a new movie called Drive Away Dolls. Now you're listening to Screen Time News Talk's TV and movie show. We turn to the week's new cinema releases, and chief among them is the new semi-Coen Brothers movie. It's directed by Ethan Coen, Drive Away Dolls. Delighted to be joined by freelance writer and movie buff Niamh O'Reilly. Hello, Niamh.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. So this is Ethan, one half of the Coen Brothers, doing a solo project and wrote it with his wife or his partner.
Correct, yes. So we're very used to talking about Coen Brothers films, and this is a Coen Brother film.
Are you of the opinion the Coen Brothers, this is a leading question, but have given us some of the greatest movies of all time?
Yes. I mean, they've had such an amazing creative partnership, Joel and Ethan.
Yeah.
So much so that they're often referred to as the dual-headed director. I mean, they answer things in sync even when they're not in the same room.
Yeah.
And you can't deny, I mean, their body of work, Fargo, No Country for Old Men, Raising Arizona, True Grit, to name but a few.
Indeed.
So they're really, really good, you know, critically acclaimed creative partnership. So they've kind of had a bit of a break. The band has sort of not broken up.
Is it acrimonious, do we know? Or?
I don't think it's acrimonious. I think, God, if you look, it's got to be 20 years or more they've been working together. So I think it's natural for them to want to go on.
One of them did a documentary last year or the year before.
Ethan did a documentary.
About...
God, now you're asking.
It was something unusual, wasn't it?
Well, obviously it's Coens. They don't do usual. He's done a documentary by himself, but this is the first big screen film outing solo. And as you say, it's not quite solo because his wife, Tricia Cook, has written it with him.
Okay.
And it's interesting because they don't have, I suppose, a traditional marriage. She has a very self-confessed queer identity. She's
okay.
a lesbian.
Right.
So they have a kind of an open marriage.
Right.
So this film also has a very queer identity, very proudly so, and she really has put her stamp on it.
Okay, so tell us what's going on. What's the story? A road movie of sorts.
It's a road movie. It is definitely a road movie. I mean, it's set in 1999.
There's no of sorts about it.
No, it's a road movie. Yeah. Defo. So set in 1999, but feels very much like a 70s B-movie.
Okay. Okay.
Road sort of flicks, exploitation kind of, you know, a pulpy sort of feel to it. So we've got Jamie and Marion, who are two friends. Jamie is played by Margaret Qualley, who is the daughter of Andy McDowell. Mm-hmm. And I mean, when you see her, you can't deny the genes there. And so Jamie is on, well, she's broken up with her girlfriend for the umpteenth time. She's not the monogamous sort of type. She's kind of a fast-talking Texan. And she's just in the middle of a breakup, so she has nowhere to live. And then her friend Marion is, I suppose, for want of a better word, the straight guy in this, even though she's not straight.
Right.
She's a lesbian too. But she's much more straight-laced. She works like a very boring desk job. She keeps getting chatted up by this guy and she's clearly not interested. So they both need a dramatic change in their lives. So they decide to hit the road. Marion is going to go and see her aunt, who lives down in Tallahassee in Florida. Jamie, of course, can't wait to go with her because she's nowhere to live. So she literally has the map out and she's marking off all the lesbian bars on the on the way down. And Marion is like, look, no, it's a straight run. We're just going to go on the interstate. We're not stopping. You know, this is not a road trip. So two very different characters. And what they do is they do this thing called a drive away. So you basically get a free rental car if you drive it to the location.
Oh, yes.
They want you to.
Yeah.
So that's the setup. Everything's going fine until they look in the boot. They have a bit of car trouble. Open the boot and there's a briefcase in there.
That's very Coen-esque.
Very Coen-esque. And there are perceived valuables in the briefcase.
Say no more.
I won't. I can't. And of course, some bad guys are after it.
Okay.
So there's a lot of Coen brothers hallmarks.
Yeah.
And for the first half of the film, you could be forgiven for thinking this is your regular standard Coen brothers film. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got the two goons. One of them is loquacious. One of them is grumpy. Mm. You know, like in Fargo, you've got a robbery gone wrong. Well, a crime gone wrong. You've got like unexplained violence, you know, out of nowhere, which you're not expecting. You've got these oddball collection of characters that have great dialogue. So it's all there.
I'm sensing a big but.
A big but. Halfway through, things sort of change and we find out what is in the briefcase. Now, I'm not going to say what's in the briefcase.
Mm.
I would have thought it was money, jewels, drugs, something like that. It's none of those things.
Okay.
And if you can guess before the briefcase is opened as to what's actually in it, I would suggest you go do the lotto because you might be clairvoyant.
Okay. Right.
You won't guess what's in it.
But does that reveal then turn the movie into something less workable?
Yeah. So it kind of, it's almost like a film then of two halves. For me, it sort of descended into farce after I found out what was in the briefcase. And I found it really hard to take it seriously.
Okay.
And like, that's not to say it's okay to have lighthearted stuff in films and screwball stuff, but it didn't really set out that way. And I feel like it shows the two dimensions of Joel and Ethan. And I think maybe without Joel there to sort of tie down maybe Ethan's, you know, crazy side, it just went off.
Okay. Yeah. So he needs his brother.
Well, I mean, like, I think if he would have gone off in a completely different direction and didn't start out a film with all his, you know, hallmarks, it would have been fine. It would have been easier to take. But it was sort of not one thing nor the other. It was sort of half and half mashed together and very visibly so.
And the central relationship of the two ladies, is that a convincing relationship?
It is. I have to say, what really kind of saved the film for me was the cast. Jamie and Marion are great. They're real foils for one another. Mm. As I said, Jamie is really out there and, you know, party girl and very fast talking Texan. She has some great little lines in there like sugar pie and, you know, all these great bits of dialogue. And Marion is very sort of closed. And like Jamie comes home on the road trip, like at every motel they stop at with someone from a bar, you know, some girl she's picked up and Marion's in the bed, you know, with her Henry James book.
With her else?
Her covers up, you know, up to her neck sort of thing. And, you know, it's all very awkward. So they're very different. And that always makes for, you know, it makes for good stuff. On
and
screen.
Matt Damon comes in towards the end.
There's a couple of good cameos here. We've got Pedro Pascal.
Yes.
Who's in it for a little bit. And then we also have Matt Damon towards the second half of the film. In quite a funny cameo. We also have Miley Cyrus. Blink and you'll miss it.
Wow.
She's also in it. So some nice little cameos to keep it interesting. But I just felt this whole thing that's in the briefcase, like I can't reveal it.
No, no.
It's a major plot point.
Yeah.
But it does change the tone of the film.
And not for the better. So,
well, yeah, I mean, it's farcical.
Yeah, but it's too farcical, it sounds like.
For me, it was.
What are you going to say stars-wise for Drive Away Dolls?
I'm going to be really harsh and I'm going to say two.
I don't think that's really harsh. You should listen to this show more often. That's positively nice optimistic at times. Nice. You're the nice one, yeah. Okay, so that's two stars for Drive Away Dolls, co-written by his partner Tricia Cook and directed and written by Ethan Coen. Take a listen to this.
Where do you want to go?
Tallahassee.
Tallahassee.
What's wrong with Tallahassee? It's very nice. There's Spanish moss and live oak.
Curly here.
Don't call me Curly.
And your name, Curly?
My name is Curly. We just met. It's too familiar.
Have you ever been to Tallahassee?
No, I got good sense. Your car is a Dodge Aries.
Oh, okay. Is that a good car?
Not really.
A clip there from Drive Away Dolls. I'm talking to Niamh O'Reilly about it. She gave it a lowly two stars and she feels bad doing it, but she shouldn't. What she should feel more bad about is 2 weeks ago she said, Cillian Murphy might not win the Oscar.
I know.
You said Giamatti might get it, but you're not disappointed, obviously. Again, another leading question.
Another leading question. I'm definitely not. Like, I wanted him to win. I was rooting for him, but it was more, I was doubting the Academy, making the right choice. But my God, wasn't it brilliant?
It was absolutely brilliant. I watched it live. I was thrilled. I thought it was a great speech as well.
It was a great speech. Yeah. It wasn't over the top, but you could see how much it meant to him. Like, he stood there for a few seconds, sort of looking out at the crowd, touching his mouth. Little giggle going, wow, is this happening?
And again, I'm asking you lots of leading questions this week, but I don't think there was any real surprises in terms of who won what. Or was there as far as you see it?
I don't know. Emma Stone, I thought Lily Gladstone might take it. But like I went back and looked at Poor Things because it's now streaming again.
Yes.
Streaming on Disney Plus. So had a second look at it. And you can't deny her performance. Mm. I mean, you know, so that was probably one of the only little surprises for me. I really thought Lily Gladstone was...
Killers of the Flower Moon didn't really feature anywhere. Sure it didn't.
It was great for Poor Things because obviously Element Pictures,
Irish-produced
film, really punching, not just punching above their weight, but, you know, winning. Really,
no, exactly. They're punching at their weight now,
absolutely.
Well, that is Niamh O'Reilly talking about the Oscars and, as I say, Drive Away Dolls. And next week you will be back, Niamh, and we will be reviewing the new, God help us, I could be wrong, of course, Ghostbusters movie.
Yes, I can't wait. You're probably my vintage, so did you grow up with?
Oh, I did. And the one that was out last year, I actually, Ghostbusters Afterlife for 2 years ago, I found quite pleasant as well.
Yeah, so, I did, but I think we have nostalgic feelings towards
we it. We do. All of that to come next week. In the meantime, possibly avoid Drive Away Dolls because it gets two stars. Niamh, thank you.
Thanks, Emil.
Now, take a listen to this.
What brings you to Ireland?
A wedding.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, no, it's not mine. It's my friend's.
Hi, Mom. I can't help but think that things would be different if I had told Paul how I felt.
You're gonna have to start speaking up for yourself.
It's too late now. I wish I was marrying Paul Kennedy.
What the?
Oh! Paul?
Emma! Have you seen Paul?
I haven't seen him anywhere.
How did he get in there?
What is wrong?
I am not the one who's getting married. She is.
Exactly. You, my friend, are marrying Paul Kennedy.
Yes!
My publicist said that we should get some PR pictures and some idyllic Irish backdrops. He thinks it'll help boost my sales figures.
Oh, so not just a wedding, but a good PR event too.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're going to spend the day with us tomorrow, can you leave your snark at home?
I'll do my best.
Yes, a clip of Irish Wish. Now, you may have heard about this. This is the new Netflix movie landing on the 15th of March, that's Friday of this week, right in times for St. Patrick's Day. And what we have is Lindsay Lohan playing a lady who's in love with someone, and then her friend ends up getting engaged to the man she's in love with. Lindsay Lohan's character is called Maddie, and she's going to be a bridesmaid at this wedding in Ireland where she really wants to marry the man. However, days before the wedding, Maddie makes a spontaneous wish and finds herself in an alternative reality where she gets her heart's desire and marries the man she wants. However, while her dream is supposedly coming true, the man sent to photograph the wedding she's about to take part in she starts to think he might actually be the one. That man in question is played by Ed Spielers. So this is a rom-com on Netflix. Yes, you may have heard about it. There are elements of Paddy Wackery in it. I am not going to lie to you. But it does what it says on the tin. It is a straight-ahead Irish-American rom-com with Lindsay Lohan being delightful as a rom-com lead. She plays opposite the aforementioned Ed Spielers. Ed Spellers, I've checked different pronunciations. Some people call him Spielers, some people call him Spellers. He plays the kind of cheeky, chappy photographer who's photographing this wedding, who she begins to fall for. I hope that's not a spoiler. You could see it coming a million miles away. Now, Ed Spielers, you may know, was once talked about Bond as being a possible Bond. He played the footman Jimmy in Downton Abbey. He was in Star Trek Picard. He played Jack Crusher. And most notably, I think he's in that great Netflix series, You, opposite Penn Badgley, in season 4, playing Reese Montrose. If you've seen You, you'll know exactly who I'm talking about. He was also mentioned for Bond, as I mentioned, once or twice before, though he denies that. He's also quite the athlete. So I had a chat with him about Irish Wish and a bit more besides.
How you doing, John?
I'm very well. I'm very well. How are you?
I'm all right, man. Yeah, I'm good.
Surviving the junket, I hope.
I mean, we've only just got going, so yeah, it's good. I mean, look,
okay, good.
I'm always it's always a lovely thing to come and talk about the work. I think, you know, I'm very fortunate to do this game. So,
indeed, you are. Well, I'm fortunate to talk to you. Tell me this: I actually spoke to Penn Badgley last year for the last season of You, and I was reading that you kind of literally left that to come to this. That must be quite an incongruous feeling, to something so off the wall and then kind of straight ahead, pleasant rom-com. It must be a weird juxtaposition, or maybe it's just acting.
I mean, obviously there is an element of it just being acting, but certainly there was definitely a shift. And it was one of the things that appealed to me the most about taking that leap and coming to do a rom-com, because I had been playing such intense roles for quite a long time that had stabbed the life out of me by the end of them. But I felt that this was a genre, an element to the industry I hadn't explored full-heartedly. And I felt that this would be the best way to do it, to team up with Netflix yet again, which was a real honor, but also to not just to team up with them, but to go and do it with, you know, one of the greatest rom-com actresses we have. So for me, it was like for want of a better phrase, a no-brainer.
Talking of great rom-com actresses, my wife, who watched it with me, said, those guys have real chemistry. And you did. But just to give you a woman's perspective as well, you and Lindsay, it really worked together. Not that you need me to tell you that, but I'm wondering, do you think that's something you guys work on, or it's just sometimes the stars align and it's there? You happen to suit each other in that way.
I think it can always be a combination. I don't necessarily think you can force that element, but I think what happened with Lindsay and I is we had a real commonality and a real understanding about how we wanted to approach the work. And I felt that by having that mutual understanding, inherently it gives respect, and then it gives trust. And then those are sort of really core foundations when you're going to have an acting partner with. So, and I think as a result, then naturally things allowed to be formed and shaped that can give a fully fledged picture of what the dynamic is between these two characters.
Yeah. Wicklow and Mayo, two of the nicest places in Ireland. I know I live there, but it must be nice to be in a location like that every morning.
Yeah, stunning. I mean, I like going off and exploring amazing countryside and locations. And for me, to be in County Wicklow, you know, I'd go for a run up at Jouse Mountain in the morning, and then I'd get nipped down, go to the Happy Pear and Greystones afterwards, get myself some scran, and then and pop off to set for the afternoon. So I had a really,
we'll keep that name check in, because they're very popular and nice guys. I actually know them, and the food is great. So once Netflix don't mind the product placement, I certainly don't either, because the food is good. And they're nice chaps as well. You're quite a serious runner, I gather. Are you? You do like trail running and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I've been playing so much football again recently that I haven't had the chance. I went for a run around Central Park yesterday, actually, but I hadn't been running as much, but I was doing crazy distances. During the sort of back end of COVID, I ran across the Cornish coastal path, like 200K.
Wow.
So that was...
Not to go down a rabbit hole, but how long did that take you? Over how many days did you do that?
Two days. I had 25 minutes sleep, 40 hours of running.
Wow. Good heavens. I like you even more now. I've done a marathon or two back in my misspent youth. So, and that just, that just seems crazy to me. Tell me this. I interviewed Idris Elba once, and yeah. I didn't want to ask him about Bond. You've been mentioned a few times. Do you just, at this point, when people like me, yeah, I've seen it a couple of times.
Okay.
That people think you'd be a good one. Are you, so you haven't heard that much then, no?
I mean, maybe like fleetingly. I don't think I'm ever on those main lists. But you know, look, as a British actor, the one thing that you aspire to probably is I mean, James Bond is a pinnacle, isn't it? What an amazing role yeah. that would be. Yeah,
and And then finally, if the internet is to be believed, and why wouldn't it? You're going to be in a Beatles movie where you're playing the partner of Brian Epstein next. Is that right? As yeah, in so, the got to hide your yeah. love away guy and all that, yeah?
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, which is exactly what Brian had to do. He was a pioneer for the music industry and for like business in general, and how but the way he had to live his life was heartbreaking in many respects. Mm. But yeah, I play a role of his lover, but he's also, I mean, he was a hustler. He was not necessarily the easiest or nicest man, the guy I
okay. met. Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, we're out of time. We look forward to that. And we look forward to Irish audiences seeing Irish Wish in the next couple of weeks. Thanks a lot, Ed. Cheers.
Good time. Cheers.
Ed Spieler's there talking to me about, well, not being Bond and running very long distances and starring opposite Lindsay Lohan in Irish Wish. And Irish Wish is on Netflix from this Friday, the 15th of March. Up next, Ed Smith on his favourite movie. Now, you're welcome back to Screen Time, News Talk's TV and movie show. It's that stage of the week where we talk to someone well-known about their favourite movie. I am delighted to be joined by the King of Rock himself.
That well-known person was not available.
Ed Smith, host of Today FM Rocks and the wonderful podcast Recorded History. He is here in the building, as he always is, to talk about his favourite movie. Hello.
So, John, can I just say, one of my favourite radio shows is your own. It's still so great to hear funny and intelligent chat about movies. It's at such a premium these days.
We're off.
There was a time when we were, you know, resplendent with TV and radio shows about movies, but you're the only man out there doing it, and you're doing a wonderful job. So it's a great honour, John. Is that a good start?
That is. I couldn't hope for better. We'll and you read everything I wrote down.
We'll just wrap it up. What's your favourite film? In. John Fardy's my favourite film.
Okay, so listen, this is a brilliant choice. It's never been chosen.
I'm surprised.
He's even got notes. He's taken this very seriously.
I do know a lot about this film, and I've watched it, I say, about 400 times. But even with that, I have to scribble down somewhere.
No problem. So tell our listeners without further ado what it is.
So we're going back to 1967, what I consider a seminal film of the era, the decade, and of all time, really. It's The Graduate, the film that made Dustin Hoffman a star. Mike Nichols, it's incredible to think Mike Nichols had come from musical theatre and comedy.
Mm.
This was his second movie. His first movie he ever directed was Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. When you talk about an opening 1-2.
Yeah.
In your directing career, it doesn't get much better, I don't think.
Is that, are you going to use your music analogy and say it's like, what's the story of Maureen Gorey? Backwards.
Yeah. Well, definitely maybe then followed by what's the story, yeah. Less bloated though, I think, The Graduate. Anyway, we'll leave that metaphor aside. But so it's an incredible film, you know, in so many regards. But I think contextualizing it, if I'm allowed to use that word, and I push my glasses up my nose, this is 1967 in the United States. Vietnam is very much to the fore of the age group that this film is aimed for. So we've got Benjamin Braddock, for anyone who hasn't seen it, just graduated from college, honors, goes back to his very upper middle class American parents, and instantly he feels the claustrophobia of expectation, of the bourgeois, I suppose, trap that he's now going to have to, the treadmill that he's going to have to, you know, get himself on.
College.
And the famous scene was like, plastics, Benjamin. You know, and people, all his father's friends, you can just see them with the blazer set and the flecks of grey and the Scotch glasses and... We're, you know, trying to put their arm around him, trying to finagle him into their business.
Yeah.
And he is absolutely repulsed by every single element of this. In walks, the titular, but from the song Mrs. Robinson, played superbly by Anne Bancroft. A couple of points to note here. Hoffman was 30 when this was made. Benjamin Braddock's 21 in the film.
Yeah.
And Anne Bancroft is only 6 years older than him. She was 36. And she steals everything. Or any scene that she's in. But so she is the wife of his father's business partner. She makes a beeline for him I think we all know the story. She seduces him, mm-hmm. begin an affair, and then he falls in love with her daughter, played by Catherine Ross. So the reason I've chosen The Garage, and the reason I do watch it at least once a year is, well, first of all, the music, Simon and Garfunkel, one of the first, I think, soundtracky films that really the soundtrack came to the fore.
And it's a character in the movie. Kind
Very
of, it
much
actually
so.
Conveys.
Yes. So The Sound of Silence used so beautifully.
Yeah.
There's an incredible sequence when Benjamin is swimming in the pool.
Yeah.
And it all looks so beautiful. Like he's got the perfect pool, the perfect life. And the editing of this film where he's just down at the bottom of the pool and The Sound of Silence is playing. And you just see the man is literally physically and he's in front of your eyes, metaphorically drowning.
Mm.
And then there's an amazing cut, edit cut where he jumps up on the lilo on the pool and it cuts to him finishing his
business
with Mrs. Robinson. Yeah. So there's all of those little touches in it as well. I think the script, I think the casting, it's one of those great cases, I think, where they nearly got it so wrong with the casting, because famously Robert Redford was in line for this, as was Warren Beatty, which would have changed the entire tone. And
they're kind of too handsome, aren't they?
Way too handsome.
Yeah, I mean, it's a problem I've learned to deal with, but it's fine in radio.
That's why we work on radio, John. You know, we just can't be hampered by our magnetic looks.
Yeah.
So I think with the casting of Hoffman, again, he was 30. He'd been knocking around for a while. This is the film that made him a star. That kind of nebbish, awkward. And again, what I love about the film is that as time has gone on, when I first saw it, and I watched it again only a couple of weeks ago, my attitude towards the characters has changed. Like any great piece of art.
As you've gotten older.
Yes. And I think you can hold it up in different lights and you can see different things. I think Benjamin Braddock is a dreadful character.
Yeah.
I think he's a dull, boring, manipulative bore. But then Mrs. Robinson, again, I'll keep saying Anne Bancroft, is absolutely stunning in this film. At the time, she was pitched as the kind of wicked villain, which the seductress took advantage of this naive young man. But there is that incredible moment in the film where he's badgering her to find out, very thoughtlessly as well. If you look back on it, it's a very uncomfortable scene because he's an absolute dose, Benjamin Braddock. But he keeps hammering, what were you doing in college? Mrs. Robinson, what are you doing in college? What did you study, Mrs. Robinson? Go on, tell me. Why won't you tell me? And then she just snaps, art. Yeah. And she had just previously said that she hates art.
Yeah.
So then you get in real insight into her story, that all her dreams were squashed, done away with and sidelined. And she's sad about the path she's taken in life.
Yeah.
And she's trying to, I suppose, find some life through this affair, this hopeless, loveless, joyless union with this man. And then the daughter, Catherine Ross, very good in this as well. But I think it speaks to so much about society at the time and society now. And I think to this day, first of all, I'm going to finish with this. Sorry if I'm rambling.
Not at all.
It has brought to me two of my favourite movie trivia facts of all time. The very famous, the iconic image of Mrs. Robinson's leg arched, and you get the shot of Benjamin
through the leg.
That is the leg of one Linda Gray,
really,
who played Sue Ellen in Dallas.
Yeah,
that's not Bancroft's leg. That's Sue Ellen from Dallas.
Why though?
I think she was a model at the time. Maybe Anne Bancroft was. And the second one, he's a great character actor. He's passed away since. You would have remembered him from Saint Elsewhere, but the great William Daniels plays Benjamin Braddock's father in this. And one of those characters, or these actors, you don't know his name, but you can name countless things that he was in. Phenomenal actor. He went on then to be the voice of Kit in Knight Rider.
Wow.
There you go. Anyway, I think The Graduate, to finish, we'll finish with the finish, I think it contains the greatest ending shot in cinema history.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I was just going to say to you, there's two moments in my quiet little life when I realised cinema could be a different art form to everything else. One is in Taxi Driver. This sounds a bit pretentious, but that long shot where De Niro's looking into a cup with an Alka-Seltzer and you realise the camera does something. And the end of The Graduate, where he's on a bus.
It flips the entire
film. And the music comes in. Yeah.
Because a lesser director, actually, another little factoid, the co-writer of the script, Buck Henry, turns up as a cameo in the hotel. He's the man behind the counter, if anyone wants to know that anyway. But with as you're talking about it, John, so listen, we all know the iconic scene at the end where he's he's banging on the window of the church. It's been parodied in Wayne's World and Simpsons. Yeah.
And I think Family Guy.
Everyone's had a go at it, you know. And there's an amazing bit in Wayne's World where he pulls in this Charlton Heston. It's still one of my favourite parts. But anyway, we'll just go to the end. I'm sorry. But it's after banging on the window. He grabs her quite violently and he goes, let's go. And they run out. Mm. They jump onto the bus. And they sit back. They're just delirious, hysterical with laughter. And a lesser director would go and cut the end. Mm. But then he lets the camera linger and their faces drop.
Yeah.
And they have nothing to say to each other.
Yeah.
And I think they're looking into their future at that very moment.
And the music.
And then the music comes up. Oh my God. Heartbreaking. Absolute showstopper. And that is, to my mind, the greatest end shot, it completely flips the film in the last 3 seconds.
Yeah. Now, we have completely spoiled it, but that doesn't matter.
I think 57 years is fair. Statute of limitations.
Absolutely. I think we're out there. Well, that is unquestionably your favorite movie. The level of detail, the notes. No, it's impressive. Yeah. Delightful to hear. Really quick one then. We always ask people, have you a memory of the first time you saw it? Now, maybe you mightn't.
I think...
Let's move on.
I was in college in DIT, Angel Street. And my great friend Paul Breen introduced me to this film. We sat down with a couple of very cheap cans. I'd never seen it on a very small television, on video, of course. And we sat down, we watched it in front of a gas fire, the usual student.
Yes.
Like a plate of beans.
I can smell the fumes from here.
The fumes coming from all angles and from all people, John. Let me tell you that. And we watched The Graduate, and my absolute life just kind of, it was like hearing Nirvana for the first time, or Leonard Cohen, or, you know, it's just that shot in Jaws with the pulling track shot.
And we always ask non-actor people in this, have you ever acted?
I was in a school play.
Fine.
Juno and the Peacock, I think it was.
Okay, who did you play in that?
God, I can't. Bentham. Was it Juno and the Peacock? Yeah, I was Bentham because I owned a suit, so they gave me the posh. that's the only reason I got it. But since then, John, I've been imposting as a radio presenter for the last 20-odd years.
Let's get to that. So his favourite movie is The Graduate, but before I let him go, obviously we can hear him every night on Today FM at 10 p.m. till midnight for Today FM Rocks.
Today FM Rocks, Monday to Thursday.
Monday to Thursday.
Sunday to Thursday, you're right.
Sunday
from
to 10
Thursday. Until midnight on Today FM Rocks on Today FM and also the Today FM Rocks channel. Yeah. My own podcast.
Now, I want to ask you about this.
Yes.
Recorded history. Don't worry, we're not rushing. You feel like you're going
to
snap this
in. I tell you why, because the first series is up there for people to listen to and go loud. The second series may not be happening, but there's about 27 or 8 episodes up there. The likes of Hozier, Niall Horan, your own Ciara Kelly.
Yeah.
It's Monday.
Shania Twain
was the first one. And basically what it is they talk about the three albums that changed their lives over the years. So there's
That's such a great title as well. Recorded history.
And it really is a wonderful way to hear about them tell their story.
Yeah.
And they react and act in a very different way as opposed to the normal junket stuff. Tell us about them, you know.
Yeah, tell us about your latest movie.
Yeah, but they're so interested to talk about their own music they love as opposed to the stuff they've just recorded. So it's up there for you. And another little plug for what I'm working on at the moment, Dishing It Out, is also on Go Loud with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins. It's a podcast about cooking. It is the crack. The two boys are absolute magic. So that is enough, but I would love if people tuned in to my radio show, Today FM Rocks, 10 p.m. Sunday to Thursday on Today FM.
Ed Smith.
Yes.
God of rock. King of rock. His favorite movie is The Graduate. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you, John.
May I ask you a question? What do you think of me?
What do you mean?
You've known me nearly all your life. You must have formed some opinion of me.
Well, I always thought that you were a very nice person.
Did you know I was an alcoholic?
What?
Did you know that?
Look, I think I should be going.
Sit down, Benjamin.
Mrs. Robinson, if you don't mind my saying so, this conversation is getting a little strange. Now, I'm sure that Mr. Robinson will be here any minute now.
No.
What?
My husband will be back quite late. He should be gone for several hours.
Oh, my God.
Pardon?
Oh, no, Mrs. Robinson. Oh, no.
What's wrong?
Mrs. Robinson, you didn't... I mean, you didn't expect...
What?
I mean, you didn't really think I'd do something like that.
Like what?
What do you think?
Well, I don't know.
For God's sake, Mrs. Robinson... Here we are. You got me into your house. You give me a drink. You put on music. Now you start opening up your personal life to me and tell me your husband won't be home for hours.
So?
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me. Aren't you?
Perhaps the most famous clip there from The Graduate. Well, certainly one of them. And that was the favourite movie choice of Ed Smith. And you heard, obviously, Dustin Hoffman and Anne Bancroft there. And I thought Ed was great on that movie. And just his point about how your sense of a film can change quite dramatically as you grow older. And, you know, his view that Dustin Hoffman, you know, wasn't really the hero of the piece at all. He came to realise, and rightly so. But it's a great movie. and a great choice by Ed Smith. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening. We will do it all again next week. Just remind you, this show is available to podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on Newstalk on Saturday evenings, although it was coming to you at 8 p.m. this week because of the rugby match. Enjoy the rest of your long weekend and have a safe week ahead, and I'll talk to you next week.